Hi, good morning. How are you doing today? I hope you're all feeling pretty good. I feel great. Thank you for asking. It's a beautiful day. Okay, today I want to talk to you for 10 minutes about the Great Fire of London. But don't forget, as always, after you finish listening to this talk, if you go to my website, the link's down below, you can find the script of this talk, you can find questions about the talk, multiple choice and essay type, you can find the answers, sample essays, and you can also find the MP3 if you want to listen to this talk. All of that stuff you can view online, or you can download as a Word document or an MP3 file to use at your pleasure. Okay, let's see how we go. 10 minutes on the Great Fire of London. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. Okay, the Great Fire of London was obviously in the city of London. London, right now, is the capital of the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom is four countries, of course. It's England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland together as one united country. Well, London originally was the capital of England, but we have to go back way before England was even an idea to talk about the beginnings of London. Let's very quickly go over the history of London. London began as a settlement, probably about 2,000 years ago. There are bronze findings and there are ships that have been dug up from the area that date back about BC 2000s, 4,000 years ago, sorry, not 2,000 years ago, about 4,000 years ago. In about 1100 BC, the area of London was named Caer Troiae, after the king or the ruler of the area that settled it. And then it carried on existing quite peacefully as a trading town, trading settlement, until about 50 AD when the Romans came and settled it. The Romans renamed it Londinium, but they didn't use it as the capital city. They didn't really use it as a big city at all. They used it as a fording place. London is on a naturally shallow part of the River Thames. And the Romans set up their main capital of England, when they colonized England, they set up their main capital at a city called Colchester, which they called Colonlundunum, I think. So they didn't use London as their capital, they just used it as a good place to park their ships, cross the river, and head up towards Colchester. So for a long time, London wasn't actually the capital city. Now, in about 880 AD, England is being invaded by the Vikings, the Angles, and the Saxons. They're invading a lot. Now, London still had Roman defensive walls around it, and the people at the time realized that that was quite a strong fortification, and that would make London quite a safe city. So a lot of people started to move into London for defensive reasons. So from about 800 AD onwards, population of London starts to grow. Now, London doesn't become the capital of England until about 950 AD. It doesn't actually become officially a capital, but the king starts to live there, the courts start to live there, and anybody that wants to be king in the future must hold London. Now, after this time, of course, London starts to become bigger and starts to become richer. Right, let's jump forward 600 years. 1665 to 1666, there is a great plague that is spreading across Europe. This is the bubonic plague. It's carried by the fleas that travel on rats. And because London is a huge trading city, a lot of merchants and traders come from Europe to London and they bring the plague with them. Now, this plague was devastating. At that time, the population of London was about 500,000 people, and the plague is said to have killed about 100,000 of those people. Across Europe, all of the plagues together killed probably about a third of the population. It was a horrific plague. Anyway, so 1666, the plague starts to die down. 1666, the population is starting to recover. It's not quite back at 500,000, but it's starting to recover. Now, at this time, London is the richest city in the UK. It's a huge trading city. It's a huge merchant city. It's very well located on the River Thames. You can sail ships right up from the sea as far as London. So it's a very useful port town, a very useful trading town. So because the city is becoming richer, more and more people want to live there. And of course, more and more people living there means they have to build more and more houses, more and more shops, more and more restaurants. So London is gradually becoming extremely crowded. London is still confined within the old Roman walls. It hasn't spread out, but it's becoming extremely cramped. Now back then, most houses were made of wood. Richer people could build houses with brick, but most people built their houses of wood. And these houses were extremely close together. Streets were very cramped, and sometimes the upper floors of the buildings would hang out. They built houses that had some street space, but came out kind of this shape towards the top. London Bridge, of course, also was covered in shops and houses. It was actually quite difficult to pass London Bridge because of the shops, the houses and the traffic. A very, very crowded city. And of course, most of the roofs were made of thatch. Now, wood and thatch, those are flammable, of course. Okay, so we have a very, very crowded city. We also have a huge quantity of gunpowder or black powder that is still kept in the city. The Tower of London had about 600 tons of it, but many people still have black powder in their houses. Why? Because the Civil War has only just finished. The Civil War finished in 1651, so we're only talking about 15 years back. And many people still don't trust the government. They still think there might be another uprising, so they keep quantities of black powder in the houses in case they have to fight again. So, flammable city, very cramped, lots of gunpowder. Not a good situation. Oh, not much time. Okay, so 1666, Sunday, September the 2nd, just after midnight. There is a bakery on a road, on a street called Pudding Lane. It's owned by a man called Thomas Farriner. Somehow, we don't know how, in his bakery, a fire starts. Now, Thomas Farriner, he died in 1670. He died 4 years after the fire finished. In the beginning, he denied all responsibility for it, but in the end, he admitted it. So the fire starts in his house. Now the fire straightaway burns his house down and it jumps to the houses next door and it jumps and it jumps and it jumps and it keeps jumping and it keeps spreading. These days we have fire engines, we have water, we have hoses, we have water hydrants all over the place to get water to the fire. Back then they didn't have that system. There were two ways of controlling a fire. One was to bring water from a river or to bring water from a storage area. The other was to make a fire gap. Now, because these houses are so close together, what they would have to do is they would destroy five or six houses in the path of the fire. So if the fire is coming this way, they would use gunpowder to destroy these houses to make a space that was too big for the fire to jump across. They would do that all around the fire, they would contain the fire, and they would let it burn out. That's what they would usually do. So why didn't they do that here? Well, it basically comes down to the Lord Mayor of London, whose name was Sir Thomas Bludworth. A lot of people say that he was very indecisive. It takes a lot of courage to say, okay, destroy all those houses, because you're destroying people's property, of course. And he didn't do that. People say he was indecisive, but actually that's not quite true. He wasn't indecisive. The problem was, a lot of the people that owned that land, a lot of the wealthy people that owned these areas, sponsored him. He had become Lord Mayor of London because of these patrons. And if he went round and destroyed their land, they would no longer sponsor him. So he wasn't thinking about the city. He wasn't thinking about the future and the safety of people. He was thinking primarily about his own prospects. So anyway, he didn't act. And the fire just spread. At the time, King Charles II, he'd only been king for a few years. After the Civil War had finished, after Oliver Cromwell had died, he'd come back from France. And he said, I will send the troops into the city and I will help. But of course, the Civil War has only just finished. The city doesn't trust the crown. There is a huge conflict here. And the city says, you are not sending troops into our city. Stay away. So King Charles kind of has his hands tied and he has to leave it up to the Mayor of London to deal with it. And the Mayor of London does nothing. So the fire starts on Sunday, ooh, and then it spreads. Now look at this picture here. This is the fire Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and finally Wednesday. It starts to spread. It becomes a huge fire. It destroys the property of about 60,000 people altogether. Now people start panicking, of course, who wouldn't? They start attacking foreign people. There is a rumor that the fire was started by the Pope or followers of the Pope, because of course at this time people are very scared of Catholics. And people start panicking, they start fleeing. The price of bread skyrockets. The price of a boat and the price of a cart goes up 10,000%. You always get racketeering in times like this. People start trying to bury their treasure, trying to bury their valuables because they think they'll be safer under the ground. And people basically run away. However, through all this panic, through all this fire and all this destruction, only 6 people are actually registered of having died in this fire. That's probably not correct. Because back then, only wealthy people would register a death. Poor people wouldn't. They would just carry on living. The family would carry on living, of course. The dead person wouldn't. So there are reports, there are guesses that probably thousands of people actually died in these fires, but their bodies were cremated and their families didn't report the death. Anyway, so the fire is spreading until Wednesday. At that time, 2 things happen. Firstly, the wind starts to die down. There's been a strong easterly wind which has been carrying this fire. Time's up. Okay, I'm going to keep going a little bit more. And the second thing is, King Charles II, he finally says enough is enough, and he sends his troops into the city to create firebreaks. And they blow up houses around the edge of the fire to contain the fire. Luckily, we talked about the London Bridge earlier, how it was covered in houses. There was actually a gap right in the middle of the London Bridge, and so the fire couldn't spread across the river. So that saved a lot of houses on the south side. The south side? Yeah, on the south side of the river, luckily. Okay, so the fire has finished. The fire is put out. I mean, it smoulders for quite a long time. It smoulders for weeks because there's a lot of heat still on the ground there. Now, after that, there's a lot of talk about what can we do. A lot of architects have great ideas here. There's an architect called John Evelyn. There's another one, Christopher Wren, obviously quite famous. They put forward proposals. They drew up plans for amazingly beautiful cities. They looked at Paris across the sea, and Paris, the capital of France, was an amazingly beautifully well laid out city. If you go there now, you can still see how well laid out it is. London wasn't like that. London was all higgledy-piggledy. It was all mixes of small streets and small houses and stuff. So these architects said, here's our chance. Let's make a beautiful city. And the king was right behind them. The king said, yes, that's an amazing idea. We should do that. The problem was, these people are wealthy and they're living outside of the fire area. The people who were affected by the fire, they have gone back to where their houses were and they've put up tents, temporary accommodation, and they're about to suffer a winter that is just coming, a very harsh winter. There is very little food and disease is going to start spreading. The crown is thinking about the appearance of the city and the future. The people on the ground are thinking about now. We need somewhere to live or we are going to die. So in that situation, it was the people that went out. They started building. They just started building. So what happens is the crown realizes that they can't win here. So they set up something called a fire court. The fire court is basically a group of judges in a court who hear people's arguments about where their land was and who should rebuild the house on their land. And basically the fire courts, they met for about 6 years after that. And they just decided there and then, okay, that's your land, you have to build. That's your land, you have to build. Because of that court, building started really, really quickly. If that court hadn't been there, these arguments might have gone on for decades, and who knows what London would look like right now. So anyway, London was basically rebuilt in the way it was before. They used slightly different materials, and the roads were slightly spaced out, but that was about it. Christopher Wren, he was allowed to build a few buildings. If you go to London now, obviously the most famous building he built is St. Paul's Cathedral, because the original cathedral was completely destroyed in the fire. If you go to London and see St. Paul's Cathedral, it is very beautiful. You can also go and see monuments. One of them commemorates the fire itself, and one of them, this one over here, it shows the extent of how far the fire went. So that's the Great Fire of London. It destroyed about 60,000 houses. It knocked London back for quite a few years. It killed probably more people than we think, but people overcame it and they carried on. And London went from strength to strength and became stronger and stronger and became the city it is today. All right, thank you. That's the Great Fire of London. Oh, it's called the Great Fire of London because there have been numerous fires of London throughout history. This was just the biggest one. Okay, if you go to my website, you can read the script of that talk, you can listen to the MP4, you can try and answer some questions, you can write some essays. The more you speak, the more you listen, the more you read, and the more you talk, the better your English is going to get. English is a skill like any other skill. The more you practice, the better you will get. All right, thank you. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.